This is the Jazz Violin Podcast, episode 63. Today I'm chatting with Matt Pickett. So, this is the first time I've done a video episode for quite a long time. And I'm just trying it out. So, I'd like to say that you can expect to see this forever from now on. But I don't know, I'm just trying things out. If you're listening to this on Spotify or whatever, nothing's changed, but you might be watching this right now. You might be checking this out on YouTube. Everyone has video podcasts nowadays, so I just thought maybe it would work for us here at the Jazz Violin Podcast. All right. So, anything to say? Hey, if this is the first time you've checked us out, I'd like to implore you to check out some of our older episodes. There's, like I said, this is 63. Before this, there's been 62 episodes, and some of them, well, I've interviewed some of the most amazing violinists playing jazz in the world. Some of the legends, some of the up-and-comers, a big mixture, and I think it's a really interesting place for you as a jazz violinist to check out. Either check out new players or get inspiration from everybody who has done this before you. I'm hoping, and I've always hoped, that this podcast is there for you as a learner. Because the reason that, well, the reason I put it together is because I wanted to check out these interviews myself, and they weren't anywhere. Check out what we've got. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. All right, so today I'm chatting with Matt Pickett, who is the founder of Klaz Festival. Now, Klaz Festival is a really interesting learning experience in Arcidosso in Italy, where you can go to learn both classical music and jazz, and both at a really high level. And it's just a really interesting concept, because under this one roof, in this one place in Italy for about a week. I think, is it 2 weeks? You'll find out in the episode. You'll be surrounded by, first of all, some of the most amazing musicians in the classical and jazz realm who are there to teach you. As well as that, you're going to be with people, like-minded people, who are there to learn, and they're there to learn at a super high standard. I just really like the idea of it, because I don't think that jazz and classical music, the worlds of jazz and classical music, speak to each other enough. And I think that's because they both speak different languages in some aspects. But I think that it's really cool to see someone like Matt putting something together that tries to deal with that issue, because Matt is a classical violinist who also plays jazz, and he really does this at a really high level. I basically thought it would be a really great idea to have an episode where we just chat about his festival. There's no endorsement, there's no paid endorsement here. I'm just really interested in what he does there and hoping to spread the word for him. Okay. Do I have anything else to say before we get on with this episode? No. Please enjoy. Give it up for Matt Pickett. Thanks for getting on here with me. I think I found... Well, I just saw this come up a bunch of times. Klaz, your festival. Yes. And I think and I think the most recent time was because... I know Casey White,
she's amazing.
Amazing young violinist, British violinist, who's going to take the world by storm. But I saw that she'd come to last year. And yeah, I just thought, you know what, this is a great topic for a podcast, because I'm always looking for new things to chat about on the podcast, and this is perfect. So I just wondered, Matt, if you wouldn't mind, first of all, just telling me a little bit about yourself as a violinist, a musician, teacher, and then we'll head on into chatting about Klaz Festival, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, I'm honored that you asked me, and really, really glad to talk about Klaz and to be here. And I've checked out some of your podcasts. I want to go back and listen to all of them. I was listening to the Drew Jarecka episode and the Tracy Silverman episode, both two of my heroes. And I saw you interviewed many other people. I'm taking some lessons with Evan Price and, of course, Jean-Luc Ponty.
Nice.
And yeah, it's just a great resource for people. And I've been following your career and your videos for a while, and you're doing some really cool stuff. So
Thanks, dude.
I started, yeah, thank you. My parents are both cellists and now retired music educators. I started violin when I was 3. I don't really remember it. I spent most of my childhood trying to chase my 4-year-old, 4.5-year-old brother on violin. He was always, like the shining star, and I was trying to keep up. We even had a family string quartet when I was younger. My dad was pretty proficient at upper strings, teaching some high school orchestra. And I knew pretty early on, maybe middle school or something, that I wanted to do music. I caught the music bug, and that I could say many moments. Certainly one, I think. Actually, when I was 7, I saw Itzhak Perlman play Brahms' Violin Concerto in person, and I was obsessed. After that concert, I was practicing 3 or 4 hours every day, but it only lasted for about a month or two, and then my parents had to bribe me with candy again. But yeah, I mean, my dad's mom was also a music educator, violinist, and violist, and I decided to go into music. Have a bachelor's and master's in violin. And when I was living in Pittsburgh, that's when I really started to get into jazz. And there were some steps before that. So it's been almost 15 years. I've been trying to do some jazz here. And I started playing a lot of viola because there weren't enough violists in my grad school. And after fifth or sixth time, somebody asked me and said, "Can you just play this one piece of chamber music?" I started playing, learned I could play the Bach suites. My parents are both cellists, and so I fell in love with the viola too. Decided to do a doctorate in viola, and studied violin and jazz there also. And then I've been teaching at Webster University since fall 2018. But I've always had this interest in non-classical music. I guess in well, middle school I took bass guitar lessons, and then that turned into a little bit of guitar as well. And I even played in the high school jazz band for a little bit on bass guitar. I was not very good at that time. I didn't really even know how to walk a bass line. And I remember my junior year, I played a musical with a semi-professional company, and I was actually playing guitar. I think that was one of my only professional gigs on guitar. And the singer was great, and she was a singer-songwriter. And she said, "Well, actually, I'd heard you're talented violinist. Do you want to play a couple tunes?" So I learned some of her stuff. It was 2, 3 chords, and I thought, "Wow, I really like this."
By the way, if you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so via Patreon. So Patreon is a place that you can, first of all, if you want to just help me out with the running costs of the podcast, you can pay me a small amount monthly. Yeah, so one of the things that you do on Patreon is that basically it's a place where you, just someone who loves listening to my podcast and thinks it's great, can just give me a wee bit of cash to help it carry on because you want to help me out. The other thing that I do with Patreon is it's a place that I sort of assemble all of my teaching. So I run weekly guided practice sessions. I have been doing so for the past 3 or 4 years now. Weekly guided practice sessions. We do that on Zoom, and I take you through different. Well, at the moment, what we're doing in the Jazz Violin Practice Club, is what I call it, is that we are working on a solo that I write. So every couple of months, I'll write a solo over a famous jazz tune, and it'll have a bunch of different things that I think make up a good solo, or some aspects that make up a good solo. And we'll learn it together, and we'll talk through what's in it, and we'll find different ways of practicing all the little aspects of that solo together. So it's been a real, I've been really enjoying doing it like that recently, and I think I'm probably going to carry on. And I think that a lot of people have been getting a lot of value out of that. So if you feel like that's the sort of thing that you would get something out of, then please also go to Patreon and sign up to that. There's lots of different options for that. If you want to, you can basically come to the classes, you can not come to the classes, you can just have the written material, you can come in and get everything, you can get the live classes, you can get monthly Q&A sessions, you can get, what else can you get? That's about it. It's pretty good. And I enjoy doing it. And I know that a lot of people have been getting a lot of value out of it. So if you enjoy my podcasts and all that, maybe try it out.
And then the next year, I've got his book right here. Tracy Silverman came to my high school because it was his high school too. I'm from a town in Wisconsin called Beloit. And Tracy was there, grew up there a little bit, went to school from the age of 10 to 16. And I got a chance to play like a short little solo with him. I think it was Joshua Fought the Battle of Jericho. But, you know, he was there for a day and just melted my brain watching him play Stevie Wonder and his own compositions on a 6-string violin that he built. And that really kind of opened up my ears and eyes into what can string instruments do beyond classical. And then in undergrad, I started playing with a street musician who played a lot of bluegrass, had lived in Nashville earlier, and used to play in front of Urban Outfitters every day in Madison, Wisconsin. And my college roommate at the time had improvised a little bit, actually grew up in a Baroque home. His parents are both recorder players and had like kind of Baroque improv tradition, and started sitting in with him on bouzouki and then eventually cello, which was his main instrument. I was just watching for 6 months, and then I worked up the courage to play with him. I played a lot of bluegrass in college and started playing with some indie rock bands, stuff here and there. And this is all getting to a point of where I started doing more jazz and how I started class. So I went to a music festival my senior year of college. During that time in college, I remember some other pivotal moments, like Christian House came and did a masterclass at UW-Madison, which is a pretty reputable music school. I mean, maybe 500 music students. There weren't really any jazz violinists at the time. There were two people that were kind of improvising on the violin, and then one guy who was just really good classical violinist who could do some. So the three of us played for that, and it was great. I remember also hearing Randy Sabine growing up. I don't know if you know who that is. Used to teach at McNally School for the Arts, which unfortunately is no longer. I believe was the first violin teacher at Berkeley, was one of the first jazz violin teachers at Berkeley in the 80s. He lived in Minnesota, Wisconsin area, and so I got to see him a few times growing up, and I saw a number of things, a Martin Norgaard masterclass, and just kind of started to listen to the music more. I don't remember when, but the first time I heard Grappelli, of course, Minor Swing, I thought, whoa, and then I found out about, you know, Steph Smith and Jean-Luc Ponty. So many people, Sven Asmussen is one of my favorites. I was definitely headed in the classical route. And I got an opportunity to go to the music festival in the Netherlands. It's called Interharmony. And I met a teacher there. He kind of changed my life. Moved to Pittsburgh for him, did a master's with him. His name was Sidney Harth. Was a kind of a legendary concertmaster, played with Louisville, Chicago, LA, New York. And I ended up working for the same festival for 7 years, Interharmony. I was in charge of planning all of their, just the whole program on the spot, setting up everyone's lessons, kind of being the liaison with the teacher, making students don't die, taking people on trips, all those types of things. So I learned a lot of the ins and outs of festivals, and then also was working at a couple small camps and things back in Wisconsin and Pittsburgh. And meanwhile, when I was in Pittsburgh, I started to get more and more into jazz. I had an opportunity to play some chamber music with a former violinist of the Pittsburgh Symphony, Roy Saun. He was having these chamber music parties at his house. And it turned out Roy Saun had started this camp, which is became Julie Lyon Lieberman's main thing, called Strings Without Boundaries. He was actually part of the team that had originally started that. And Roy was playing in a hot club group at the time. And Roy's amazing. He confessed to me, you know, he said, I started getting a jazz violin in my late 40s, 50s. And a lot of times I have to compose my solos, just because it's still a lot for me to think of improv on the spot. So one of these chamber music parties, we just started to play a couple blues licks, and he realized I could improvise. And a month or two after that, his band called me and they said, Leon Roy has decided to step back from this. Do you want to play? It's called The Flying Dutchman. And then I convinced them to change their name to Hot Club of Pittsburgh. I did that for a couple, 2 or 3 years or so. And it was three guys that were 30 years older than me that had been playing together for 30 years. And I learned a lot, just being around them. And we mostly played Django tunes. And that was really great. And meanwhile, I was working at this festival, Interharmony, going to Europe in the summers. I ended up meeting some jazz musicians in Germany one summer, jazz guitarists. And he said, you know, let's sit down and play some tunes. Actually, it's all around that same time, because I'd always admired and respected jazz, but it scared the crap out of me. Because I thought, you know, I can play blues. It's three chords. I can play some fiddle stuff. I can play a little bit of a singer-songwriter, but some of the jazz harmonies get pretty complex. So in these experiences in the summer, and then also starting to play in the group in Pittsburgh, I started to learn, and it was all outside of the school setting. I think I was maybe a little too shy or nervous to approach some of the jazz faculty and say, hey, I'm interested in learning, just because I felt that I didn't really have a place there. Because I'd hear, you know, some of these sax players, trumpet players kind of blazing through stuff, and I'm just starting out. And so I had a number of more experiences over the years, and I ended up starting to plan little informal jazz jams at this huge classical festival that was just chamber music and orchestra. And out of 100, 150 people, there'd always be, you know, 5, 10 people that knew how to improvise or at least read a lead sheet and try some tunes. It turned out to be really fun. And so I ended up kind of having a falling out with this other festival. And meanwhile, the informal jazz jam started to become more formal. Some people from the town started to come, and they really enjoyed it. And the people in Archidoso, at the time, the mayor and some other influential people, they approached me and they said, we'd like to start something more jazz oriented here. And again, feeling bashful, I said, well, I'm not the bee's knees at jazz, but I know there's this whole community of string players who are interested in getting out of the box and trying non-classical music. So I was doing a doctorate. I just moved to Lansing, Michigan. I was working at Panera to help pay the bills. It was like 5 a.m. shift, cutting people's bagels. And talking back and forth with my friend Thomas, who's a Swiss German composer, lives outside of Archidoso, but what this kind of new festival could be. And the whole idea I proposed was originally it was string and piano, taking classically trained musicians and just getting them to start to play off the page and to start to learn about jazz and to realize that they can do it too, and they need to get over the fear and just to try it. And we're talking back and forth, and one day he emailed me, he said, it's called Klaz. Good luck. And so that was fall 2015. The first year we started, 2016, was I think 7 teachers, 11 students. And the next year we did a classical and jazz session. Longer days. We did that for 2 years, and the classical session grew, the jazz session shrunk. And I thought, oh no, oh my gosh, that's not why I created this. So 2019, we put everything back together, made it super long, and then the pandemic happened. And then we started again in 22, and then we had last summer 23. And so I guess this is our seventh summer. That was a lot of information.
That is, you know, that is very, very well put. You know, I basically now know everything. You did it all.
Yes.
So it just sounds like you were, it sounds like creating Klaz was like the perfect thing for you to do. You're someone who's started from playing classical. You, from sort of early-ish in your playing, you sort of wanted to do some slightly different things. At least you were always looking for something slightly different. And then you started working in a classical music festival. And then all those three things put together, you've got this. And, you know, also playing loads of jazz yourself and working on it yourself. Starting classical, going jazz, working in the festival. You were just meant to make this festival. It's quite a good story. I like it. I would like to just touch on the sort of people that come to Klaz. What are they? Who are these people? Who are the people who come?
Yes.
What are they coming for? What are they looking for?
So, one of the first people that got on board with Klaz is a violinist named Helmut Lipsky. He's not a household name, but I encourage everybody to look him up. He is incredible. He was a Galamian and Perlman student way back in the day, and then has spent most of his career teaching at different colleges in Montreal. He's taught at McGill, University of Montreal, and the longest period, the Conservatory of Montreal. But he really got the jazz bug by listening to Jean-Luc Ponty, fell in love with it. He was also, uncanny enough, a classmate of Jeremy Cohen's. They were in school at the exact same time in New York studying with Perlman. Jeremy Cohen was a former Turtle Island member and runs a group now called Quartet San Francisco. And Helmut just has this brilliant mind and has this amazing background with kind of the history of violin, studying with Galamian at Juilliard and all this stuff, and just can improvise over anything, is into a lot of different cultures of music. He's had his own groups over the years. He opened up for Grappelli one time. He's played at the Montreux Jazz Festival a number of times. And so he was one of these people I met at the previous festival, and he really inspired me. We started to do the jazz jams there, and I started Klaz, and he was totally on board. And he shortly connected me with Jeremy Cohen. The really exciting thing about this for me is I thought, well, I also get to learn and hire a lot of my heroes. So it was just amazing to kind of be in relation with both of them early on. And then, through recommendations, I stumbled on a cellist. His name is Crispin Campbell. And Chris had a long career teaching at Interlochen Arts Academy in Michigan. He was the main cello teacher there for about 35 years, just retired, I think, last year. Big congrats, Chris. And Chris grew up in the Bay Area, played guitar, and kind of always had this dual life, like guitar and cello, but would secretly improvise on his own, and had started an improv class at Interlochen. And so those were three people early on that we invited, and a lot of people came through Helmut's connections. The first summer we had a wonderful French violinist, French-Belgian violinist, Françoise Derrissin. I don't know if you've run across her. And we had a Italian cellist who lives in Germany, Lucio Amanti. I apologize to anyone if I'm missing anyone. It started small the first year, and it's gained some notoriety, and we've had some really impressive students. I mean, somebody like Casey White coming to come and check it out. It's been amazing. So over the years, we've had a number of wonderful violinists. I mentioned Drew Jarecka earlier. He came in 2017. Also that year, Eugene Friesen was there. He came this last summer, directs the Berklee World String Orchestra. We've had Tracy Silverman came last summer, which was really amazing. The faculty, I would say, is about a third jazz style, a third classical, and then a third classical and crossover. So I would put myself in that camp that I'm strongly rooted in classical, but play a lot of jazz and other styles. Currently in a mariachi and a klezmer group too, and the original name, as you probably guessed, classical and jazz class. It's kind of become more a melting pot of different musical styles, with the focus on learning improvisation through the vehicle of jazz, I would say. But we've had some really high-powered classical people there too, that have been interested in approaching jazz or just being around the environment and starting to learn. It's been really fun to see, amazing classical stars like get totally out of their element and say, "I'm going to try to play this blues and play without sheet music," which is totally foreign for some of them. We've had some really remarkable students coming. We've had players from San Francisco Symphony, Puerto Rico Symphony come to learn as students at the festival because they're interested in improv. We've also had mostly younger students. I would say it's kind of collegiate level, collegiate music major, and even some younger kids. And we've had a few adult amateurs. I think we try to cater the experience for anyone who wants to come. The majority of our population is college music majors, though.
Okay, interesting. So the majority of the people coming to study are college music majors, and I'm guessing mainly people who are classical musicians,
The
who are sort
majority.
of the majority who are looking to branch out. But these are sort of like high-end classical students, right? People who are looking for a future in classical violin, maybe, or in music for sure, and they are trying to branch out and open up this other side of their playing. Is that a good? Okay, that's cool. That's so cool. And yeah, this whole thing of classical music and jazz sort of talking to each other a bit more makes so much sense. And actually, yeah, you I think it's quite it's I think it's quite a hard thing to set out to do because people are so, people can be so stuck in their ways, and those two types of music, classical and jazz, they sort of require you to be quite, not set in your ways, but require you to be quite protective over the music and protective over music in general, right? Because we have to be, or we have to. There's a lot of gatekeeping. We feel like we often have to in all walks of this music. A bit of gatekeeping, but don't ruin this music. Don't do it wrong, because it's so important to us all. So it's I can imagine it's quite a hard thing to get to go down. What are some of the challenges that you found over the years running the festival? Have you found challenges? And if you have, what are they?
Oh, for sure. I think
And I'm talking. I guess I don't mean like yeah, like the one of the buildings burnt down 1 year. I sort of mean like trying to try to sort of yeah, try to go down that path, basically trying to yeah that musically,
Oh,
basically.
about the buildings or not
No,
that?
not the buildings. Matt,
No, I
sorry,
think
that wasn't a very good question. Well,
no,
I'm
I
asking.
got you. I think you can relate with this, running your own podcast and teaching forum, that just leading anything is very difficult, and it's hard to please everybody.
That's right.
And I think I'm very happy that most of the or maybe all, I don't know, of the people that come to class get something out of that. That they're just kind of enriched with maybe something totally new that they hadn't experienced before, because there's such a wide range of people there. So I was remiss to mention earlier that since 2000, was it 17? Yeah, we've had all winds at the festival, but purposefully have not invited trombone, saxophone, trumpet, the typical jazz instruments. We have rhythm section. But yeah, I mean, we've got oboists learning how to play monk tunes, which is
Nice.
totally out of their element. I think a challenge has also been giving everyone their space. There's a lot of different musical personalities there, and you talk about gatekeeping and really sticking to certain things. I kind of consider myself being in the middle of all these different classical jazz and other styles, and I'm inviting people who are at the top of the field in those certain divisions, and I realize sometimes being around them that I'm like, oh, I better go back to the shed, and like I think, yeah, just it's 2 weeks. We try to jam pack as much in there as possible, and I think realizing that less is more sometimes, and that all the concerts don't have to have everything on it. We always so we have a board. Helmet and Chris and Jeremy, and I mentioned this composer Thomas Forman is on it, and then Nancy Stegnita, who is a wonderful classical and jazz flutist. She teaches at Interlaken, and Laura Andriani. She is a amazing violinist and specializes in early music as well, so has that improv tradition from early music, and is Italian, of course. So that's our board, and we talk often about curricular decisions, and what are our goals at class? What do we want students to leave with? What are we trying to impart? How are we trying to make an impact in music education? And I think the most important things are that we want to open people's minds and make them realize that they don't have to stick to silos and just play one thing, and they should promote other styles and continue to be curious and to always grow, whether that's in classical or jazz or tango or bluegrass or whatever.
Yeah. Great. Well, I mean, yeah, it's great. And what I don't know America that well, but from doing this podcast, chatting to so many different musicians, I always try to speak to as many different musicians as I can. I've noticed that I feel like in America there's a bit more of that openness to embracing all styles or a number of styles. I look at someone like Jason Anik, who I know quite well through doing this, meeting him a couple of times in London as well. But he's a very eclectic player. He plays mixture of swing and a bit more modern jazz, and then some other stuff as well. And I see that as a real good thing. And sometimes I think in let's say in Europe, maybe, and I'll put, but maybe I'll just speak about the UK. It can be a little bit like you do your thing, you stay in your lane, even and that could be like old swing. You don't do modern jazz as well as old swing. You're making it even more niche. I don't know. Actually, that's just me talking rather than asking a question. But I do. Is that anything that you've know? Have you ever noticed that? I feel like that might be the case. But is that something that you've come across at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's important that it's always, excuse me, always part of the conversation now. I feel like everywhere has changed a lot in the last 20 years, and continues to change. I feel like there are certain pockets. If you go to New York, there's a different thing going on there than I don't know. I don't want to disparage another area in the US or a state, but
Sure, yeah.
every place is different.
Everyone's
I feel
different,
that a lot of Americans, we also have a lot of Canadian students that come. We have a number of Canadian faculty. They feel a different reverence for the music in Europe.
yeah.
I think that audiences pay attention in a different way and
Okay.
respect it in a different way sometimes. I mean, again, it depends where you are.
So different, yeah.
But I notice in the US, there still are so many music departments where it's like classical is this way, jazz is this way, and there's
It's the
not a
same.
over lot, lot of overlap, but
Yeah.
it's happening more and more. So just in the last 5, 6 years, I know Scott Tixier was one of the first people ever to be hired as a full-time tenure track jazz violin teacher, teaching all the way up to the doctorate level. And he's at North Texas. Martha Mook started a multi-style strings program. I think it was 2021. All these new types of things are starting to happen. I mean, jazz violin has been around for 100 years now, but it's still not common. And then if you look at jazz cello, it's even less common. Jazz viola is like almost a misnomer, right? So I keep thinking, like, man, I gotta start playing more viola. I bought a fa mi viola a couple of, about a year ago. It's a six string instrument that Eric Aceto makes. I'm still learning how to play it as a C and an F. But I notice more and more like job postings that I mean, that's how I got this Webster job. They wanted somebody who's very proficient in classical teaching experience, music entrepreneur, and has experience improvising and playing other styles of music.
Cool.
So you see it sometimes now. Job postings are like, okay, we want a violin professor, but do you play some jazz too or
Cool.
improvise? Which is great that it's happening. I think it needs to happen more.
Cool. Yeah, so you just noticing things opening out more in the educational world. But I do think it's stuff like your festival that's going to help that, go forward. Really, it is
Hoping.
like small steps, right? And I feel like
Yeah.
that is such a big thing. And I guess also having people like I think I quite like that you're really trying to, you're not just like, hey, this is just a jazz violin festival. This is like a classical music and jazz festival. Because actually, if you want to win over classical musicians to be able to say, oh yeah, well actually maybe I should play a bit of jazz, you maybe have to show them that you can play, yourself as a classical, as someone who is proficient in classical music, is like the perfect person to sort of do that, is to say, hey, look, I'm playing in tune and I've got good technique, and and I'm playing jazz, and it's not just like, because I think for a long time it would maybe be seen as like, oh, you're playing jazz because like you can't hack it as a classical whatever, and I think the way that you're doing it is a really good way, because it just shows people, no, there's a lot of things they've got a lot of things in common. And even that, I
Yeah.
mean, have you ever looked into that, the third stream thing, the Gunther Schuller's whole thing about the
Yes.
third stream? What do you think about that?
One of my friends did so we have these little like masterclass presentations. A cellist came and taught last summer, James Waldo. He's
Yeah.
a cello lecturer at University of Wisconsin-Madison. He did a whole presentation on the birth of the cool
Nice.
and third string music for the students and say,
Yeah.
hey, they took this mix of classical musicians and really heavy like bebop players and put them in a room and they created an album.
Nice. Yeah.
There was something you said earlier. Oh, about I think these connotations that we have or traditions in music, like you can't do this, you should do this or that. And it made me think of for anybody listening to this podcast that doesn't know about Eddie Self, please check him out. Because he was an extremely gifted classical musician who was not given the opportunities because of the color of his skin and decided, thankfully for us, to get into jazz violin also, which collided with him meeting Grappelli and Reinhardt and Sven Asmussen. And but yeah, I Yeah, I think that's stupid that we have that, you know. It's like, if you can't do this, do this instead. And I think that in music, one of the things that's always been enriching to me and attractive is to try something new, get out of my comfort zone. Last year, I met a Hindustani violinist, and he came to St. Louis a couple times, and we loved it so much, so we decided to start a group. I'm trying to learn some things about Hindustani music, but he wants to totally cross over with classical and jazz. And I just think that music is more connected than we think.
Yeah, the Hindustani thing is really interesting because I think jazz and especially jazz strings can learn a lot from that because it's like it's one of the oldest, forms of improvisational classical music, really. And it's really like the music is very based on like being super improvisatory, as in like the south stuff isn't, the southern stuff isn't as much, but like the northern stuff is. And they've got these amazing systems of practice, practicing like scale practice that really does like open things out. So yeah, great, love that stuff. Have you ever checked out, I just recently we did Focus by Stan Getz. Have you heard that album?
It's been a little bit. I have to go back and listen to it.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's the, is it Eddie Sauter? He was a composer and arranger, string arranger. And Stan Getz basically was in the middle of his career and was bored. I think I might be, someone could, if I'm talking rubbish, someone tell me, someone email me. But from what I remember reading into it, he was a bit bored and he wanted a real challenge. So he had this guy write him a suite of music, Focus basically, and it's Stan Getz improvising over a string ensemble
I
playing.
was listening to this last year. Yes.
Ah,
And I'm
nice.
blanking on the name. I'm going to look it
Yeah, great. Focus, Stan Getz Focus basically. I think it's Eddie Sauter. Eddie Sauter. I can't remember how to say his name.
I don't know if it would be Eddie South because I don't know that
Not South,
timing would
not Eddie
work, but
South. Eddie
yeah.
Sauter. Eddie Sauter. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
The music is like it's really progressive for,
Yeah,
especially for
you're right.
someone
Eddie Sauter.
Sauter. Nice, cool. It's really progressive for Stan Getz basically, because Stan, I always think of Stan Getz as being quite like a sort of chilled out. Well, he was a very chilled out musician, but just the album it's a really great example. I mean, it's not the string orchestra aren't improvising; it's all written, but it's like contemporary classical music with an improvised lead line. So it's Stan Getz basically was given this lead sheet to improvise the melody over the top of this over the top of this string stuff, and it's intense, man. It's really good. We basically played it recently in London at the South Bank Centre with Nubia Garcia playing the sax lines, and it was great. But I wonder if that, I mean, it would be the sort of thing that like would work so well at your festival, as in like working on it with students and stuff. Anyway, it just came to mind when I was listening to you talk.
Thank you for, yeah, I got to go back and listen to that.
I think you'd love it. I think you'd really love it. What's the what the plans for this coming next this next
Yeah, so
festival?
we've had been really lucky to have some special guests over the year over the years. In 2018 we had Jeremy's group Quartet San Francisco came and played and worked with students. In 2019, we invited Joshua Roman, who's mainly a classical cello soloist, but plays a lot of new music and other styles. Improvises a bit, and I think that was a really fun experience. And then, of course, this last summer, Gianluca Ponti graciously came,
Amazing.
did a master class, and couple, interview sessions with the students in public, and he was incredible. It
Great.
was amazing. We have an early bird deadline right now. I don't know when this will be posted, but our early bird deadline is in about was it 9 days from now? No, 8 days. Yeah, a little over a week, the 15th of February. And I know this might be put up later, but
What's the date
based on
today?
how
It's February now, isn't it? Yeah, I can do it.
it
It's
is
going to go up.
February.
It'll go up this month. It'll go up this month.
All right.
Yeah.
I think once, 8 days from now, once we've kind of compiled, most of our students tend to apply before the early bird deadline. Check it
Yeah.
out, clazmusicfestival.com. Then once I know the numbers, I'll be able to have the budget to invite a guest. But I don't want to make any premature announcements and say, well, I'm thinking about this person.
Okay,
But it's,
okay, it's too we're too early for to talk
yeah,
about
it's a
what's
little too
going on.
early.
Fair,
But
fair,
I
fair.
think, one of the things you mentioned earlier, you said, I think it's cool that classical musicians come and they do this. We instituted this basically the last 2 summers, and not everyone was crazy about it. Most students loved it. Every single student plays in a chamber music group and a combo. So one is completely classical, and the other one is more improvisatory or group-based, different styles of music. So they get that kind of holistic experience.
Wow.
And yeah, we'll say that some students come and they're a little more tunnel vision on classical, or some come and they're a little more tunnel vision on jazz. And then there are gems like Casey, who's amazing at both. That was a real treat to have her. But yeah, we don't have the special guest figured out for this summer, but we have some really exciting faculty. So trying to think of some of the new folks that we have this summer. Former first violinist of Turtle Island String Quartet, the great Polish violinist Mateusz, I'm gonna say his last name wrong, Smozinski,
Yeah.
I believe. And he runs the Atom String
Yeah.
Quartet. So I'm really excited that hopefully he's gonna be with us this summer.
Great.
Of course, Helmut and Chris are back, and Jeremy, and lots of crossover string player musicians.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, cool. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And I do hope that this actually does lead to some people signing up, because it just sounds like such a great experience. And from what I saw from Casey, she seemed to really enjoy it and got a lot out of it. Yeah, and I just love to see people just learning about improv on string instruments more. It just needs to be done more. It really does. And what are your plans this year other than that? Matt, what are you doing? Are you music-wise? Have you got anything? Have you got any projects that you're working on?
Yeah, I tend to do a smorgasbord of activities, and that really keeps me interested and excited about music. I just played 2 weeks ago, I played a performance of Tchaikovsky Concerto. Last weekend, I played a bluegrass show with the same guy I was telling you about. He's 85 now,
Wow.
Dave Sewell, and my buddy James. We reconnected. We hadn't played together. We used to play together 20 years ago. We last time was six. Coming up, I'm doing a jazz fusion show. There's a group in town called Bach to the Future. Usually Tracy Silverman plays with them, and when he can't, sometimes I play with them. So we've got a show coming up with that. In April, I'm doing a concert of premieres, which is mostly new music, and I've got music written for violin, viola, and fa viola. A couple other jazz shows and things along the way, and I just try to keep the diversity of music. For me, that makes it really interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Teaching students too.
You do seem like you're that's a big part of your musicianship is actually, or just as your maybe your personality, you really like that a lot of different things going on. So you like to focus on lots of different things.
And sometimes I jokingly call myself the jack of all trades, master of none.
Yes, it's a
I
classic.
think it helps. Each one helps the other, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar. I'm always basically obsessed about with something for a decent amounts of time, but it's they don't always. Yeah, I'll be basically like, right, for some reason at the moment, I'm really digging into Romanian folk, like Romani Romanian folk stuff, which is like a big
I
love
love
of
that
mine.
stuff, man.
I've spent bits of time really digging into Hindustani stuff as well, jazz, and I sort of need to keep that. It just happens naturally, I guess. And I guess that's you know, Klaz, for example, is a really good place to sort of help musicians who maybe feel that that's how they are, feel a bit more at home, right?
Yeah, I think we're, as I said, opening people's minds, but also just realizing that music doesn't have to be one thing.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense that it is just one thing. Cool. It's been really nice to chat to you, man.
Thanks so much for having me.
If there's anything else that you want to plug on here in regards to
so back in 21 we started a little string intensive in St. Louis. So if you're in St. Louis and you want something to do, it's just a 5-day thing in June, and watch out. Maybe we'll have other class things at some point. July 15th to the 29th in Archidoso. It's an amazing little Tuscan town that I think just being there is very inspiring for everyone. So hope you can join us.
Thank you so much for listening to that, guys, or watching. Maybe you're watching because we're trying out this new video thing. Who knows? Thanks so much for checking us out. I really enjoyed chatting to Matt. And I'm excited to hear if any of you guys, any of my listeners, do end up going to the festival. And I'd like to hear from you. Let me know in the comments, or let me know just via email. I'm always happy to receive an email from you guys about whether you went to this, whether you enjoyed it, whether you've been before. Blah, blah, blah. Do I have anything else to say to you? I'm not sure. It's a real long sign-off. I'm told, I'm always checking out how to do better on YouTube, to have like not a long sign-off, because people just go, oh, God. They just turn you off. But I feel like I always have a long sign-off with my podcasts, and it's just something that I've always done. I'm not worried about it. But now I'm thinking about it too much. So, bye.